at that luminous blue. All I wanted was to be with you. All alone inside my head. All I wanted was to.
Good morning. You're listening to Lift Your Spirits with Dina Marie. Every Friday here on 1150 AM KCAN-W, I'll be introducing you to fascinating people, fun places to visit, and activities that are guaranteed to lift your spirits.
Guaranteed.
We have a new segment.
We do. We'll get to it momentarily.
We're going to try it. Let's see. It's been a crazy week. I seriously have no idea where I've been, except for I did get lost in the woods. So what I'd like to do...
You found your way back. That's good, because we needed you to be here on the show.
Yes. So. I could be lost in the woods for quite a while, but I want to try a new segment.
All right. Just going to launch right into
just
it? Launch
right into it. Thank you, Amanda at Monroe Rocks. You are my earth angel for saving me and bringing me back to my car 6 miles away when I got lost in the woods at Lord Hill. You are my earth angel.
Oh, yeah. That's good. I like that.
Amanda, I'm not kidding. I was really scared. And then I come out of this beautiful woods, and it's just like we're talking about the song Strange Earth, Legacy of Green, but... It was like Legacy of Green, and then you walked into like a gravel pit. And I was, what am I going to do? Anyways, thank you so much, Amanda.
Perfect.
All right, one more. Thank you, Donna, for listening each week, traveling to Kauai to see me so I can take you to a Hindu temple, and then letting me go to your cabin where I need to retreat desperately in ocean shores. Love you every minute.
That's good.
How's that? Okay.
Perfect.
I think that's all I got. But I got that running today. As I was going past Walmart, thinking to myself, should I be running again all by myself? And joining us this morning is Van Connor.
Good morning, Dina.
So who did I call when I got all scared?
You called me. You did sound a bit panicked. You said you were covered in scratches and you're all wet from falling down a hill or something.
Oh,
and you're
no.
Like, I don't know where I am. I don't know where I am. I'm like, hold on. What town? I don't even know what town she's in. I don't know. She's in near Snohomish, something called Lord Hill. It sounded like some kind of like a cult, like, you know, like John of God.
I think he's blushing a little bit.
But guess what? I started in Snohomish and end up in Monroe.
Wow. We're going to have to get you a tracking device.
That's why I brought
this morning.
Are you serious?
Yeah, this morning. Because she said she was jogging this morning and kind of. Had some issues, and I was like, tracking device.
Yeah, I think that's not a bad thing. Yeah. It's nothing. I think it's very safe. Yeah. It's a safe move. Everyone, I mean, if you're up in the hills, like snow, what is it, skiing, stuff like that, you know,
right.
In the backcountry, even though you're not supposed to, guys have one.
They do.
Tips are have your backpack, have some water, right. Have your phone charged, and maybe an extra coat.
And for you, a helmet with a flashing light on it.
All right, cool.
And siren.
All right.
I like
cool.
it. All right. Well, joining us in the studio is this lovely young lady. Who is this, Van Connor?
This is my daughter, Violet.
Yay!
Hello. Violet's joining us in Ocean Shores, and Van wanted to have Violet on the show because we co-wrote a song together.
Yes. I co-wrote Legacy of Green with my dad and Dina.
Oh, this is your first time and you're doing fine job. Doing a fine job.
Thank you.
And joining us on the phone is...
This is my brother, Gary Lee Connor. Good morning, Lee.
Howdy. I'm way down here in San Angelo, Texas. Very far away from...
Probably warmer than where we're at, but let's see.
Yeah, it's coming.
Violet. Mm-hmm. So what band are these your uncle and your dad in, or were in?
Screaming Trees.
So growing up, did you know that?
Yes, I did know that. We had album art on the walls in our dining room, but I didn't really know how big they were until I was older.
That they were actually well known?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see a video with them on it? Like,
yeah, I've seen a video or two. Yeah.
And so, Gary Lee, you...
Yeah.
And Van have been doing, there's too much to talk about today. You guys have done way more things than just the Screaming Trees, and you have some new stuff, and so does Van. What's coming out today?
Oh, yeah. Today is a CD-only re-release of Sweet Oblivion with six bonus tracks. It's a lot of the things that were B-sides on the singles during that time. A couple originals, a couple covers, And it's on cherryred.co.uk. It's licensed from Sony. And I believe you can get it on Amazon. If you look on Facebook on the Screamin' Trees group and also my own, this Gary Lee Connor site on Facebook, there's lots of posts about how to get it.
And I would definitely go
it's
to Gary.
It's coming out. It's being released today. So no, you don't have to pre-order it anymore. You can actually order it, I believe.
Yeah, and Gary, you keep up on the Facebook. So you have, I kind of watch your Facebook to know what's going on,
yeah.
So I can update Van.
Right. I don't know what's going on. In fact,
yeah,
I didn't even know this is coming out.
Yeah,
Lee probably told me. I thought it was some weird scammy thing, and I called Lee all upset, and he was like, calm down.
No, they actually did a re-release of a very similar one with some B-sides of Dust about 2 years ago, our last record. So this is like sort of a companion to that. But between the two of them, they'll have all the unreleased things that were on CD singles during that time.
And aren't there, don't you do the liner notes or something, your interview?
Yeah,
for
and
the...
there's also, yeah, well, I did an interview, and also Jack and Dino did too. There's a real nice booklet, a pretty long bunch of interview stuff on here, sort of the history of how the record was recorded and stuff like that.
Cool, because I can't remember any of that.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was interesting doing that. I mean, it was an email interview, so I was kind of meticulous about, you know, I was like, you know, actually remembered things that I had remembered for a long time and wrote down and then sent them to the guy, put them in here. So, so you might find out some stuff that you didn't know about how it was recorded if you get it and read that.
And, Van, you have a song on there that wasn't released?
Oh, that, maybe? Yeah, that song, Maybe, I think that's on there, right, Lee?
Yeah, it's Maybe, and it says Van's new one in parentheses.
Van's new one. That's what we called it because it never came out, except for it was on a Japanese version of the Japanese version of vinyl. I remember it was on that.
Yeah, that's probably the only song that Lanigan did not sing of any Screamin' Trees song, isn't it? He sang.
Ever. Isn't that weird? We were just talking about that yesterday, Dina and I, and it's like there was never, even though, of course, you sang them all in the first place usually, but but the release,
well,
the pro studio.
Well, and that's what that's what I want to take the show to, is the whole process, because I feel blessed that I got to do that with Van, and just the songwriting and then how you go into the studio and then maybe you hear it so much you don't ever want to hear it again. Right now, I want to ask you, Gary, when did you first write your first song?
Oh, well, I started out writing poetry, like, you know, I was around 20 years old or so, right before we didn't really have a band or anything yet. And I really got into writing poems. I wasn't really into any poets. I was really into Bob Dylan. That was my main inspiration.
Good for you.
And I wrote probably hundreds of poems.
Remember you'd make those little books.
Yeah, I made books of them. You know, nobody really ever read them but my mom. I kind of lost most of them now. If anyone, or maybe some of the family has some of them still. I don't know. But, just about a year before we started the band, about 1984, I bought a four-track cassette recorder. And that was what kind of, like, set me off to, like, actually realize that I could write songs. You know, I was like, well, I got these poems. Maybe I could, like, you know, kind of put up the music. And that was what began, you know, my songwriting. And then about a year after that, when we got together with Mark Lanigan, he heard some of the songs that I'd been doing on there. And even though at the time we were just kind of playing some covers, you know, we were playing Black Flag covers, Jimi Hendrix covers, and we did Purple Haze and that. And this was in the summer of 1985. And he was like, we could actually do original songs and not do covers. So that was kind of started that.
And who sang the first original song? And what was that first song?
Well, in the band, Mark was, you know, the singer. So, but most of the demos, I sang the song. And probably, let's see, some of the earliest songs I ever wrote, I think the very first one I remember writing Screamin' Trees ended up doing was probably Icy Stars. That's actually on Clairvoyance. You know, our first recordings were Other World, the EP, even though that didn't come out in SSP until a little later. But it was originally a cassette that was recorded in 1985. And So I See Stars, I think, is the first one. Then all those songs that are on, the six songs that are on Other World, are those a lot, except for Pictures of My Mind, was actually, that Mark and I wrote that together. That was the first time I ever wrote with anybody. I remember we sat down, you know, he wrote, I think he probably wrote most of the lyrics, and then he sang it. But it was, I have a really funny memory of when we first did the demos of Mark singing the song. I had sat him down, like, across from me with the four track, and, you know, like, basically making him sing all the songs that I sang already on the demo. And, you know, he, at the time, he didn't, and we didn't, even realize he was much, you know, could sing at all. You know, he was, he sang, like, at a party one time with some friends of his, right?
And one song.
He listened to Other World. His voice is much different on Other World. You know, it's higher. It's not really real assured. And, you know, so we're kind of like, then, you know, a few months later, we started recording Clairvoyance. It's like, this guy's got sort of a good voice. And then by the time we got to the next album, it's like, geez, this is really special, you know, Mark's voice. So, you know, that was a, you know, definitely inspiration for me, just having somebody singing the song that I was writing that was, you know, because I could sing pretty good, but I never considered myself, you know, like a great singer. And I just, you know, had to.
Well, I like your stuff. Van's been playing it for a year or two, and I really like it. But it's that collaboration, you know, and people just listen to the radio and they hear a song. They have no idea the amount of work that goes into it, and how, like Jack and Dino coming in at the end and helping us, or just, you know, it's an amazing process.
Yeah, Jack played drums on that song you just heard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, actually, we were recording, and I was like, I want drums on this. And then I called Pickerel, our old drummer, original drummer, and he wasn't available. So I called Jack, and he lives right by the studio. So he comes down. You know how Jack was? He was like, well, I'm not sure about this. I'm like, come on, man, just play it. And he did, and it was like, you know, two takes. And then he ended up mastering the record, and he mastered your last record, I know.
Yeah, that was really great.
I remember as a kid, though, a little bit different. I remember us starting. I mean, I think the creative process for songwriting for us really started when we were younger, when we used to go sneak into the audiovisual lab at dad's school. Our dad was a school principal.
Yeah.
Remember? And then you'd try to, like, plug one tape machine into another and...
Yeah.
And multi-tracking, and you blew stuff up, like smoke would come out.
Atta boy.
Big trouble.
Atta boy.
Well, yeah. Remember, we used to make comedy tapes. We did the, like, sort of teaching
comedy tapes.
And stuff.
That's right.
I forgot about that. Yeah. Those are long gone. That was, like, probably quite a way before we started the band.
Insane fireworks.
I had that one guitar, that silver tone with the amp in the case, had the American flags hanging on it. We got for like $25 at St. Vincent de Paul. That was the first guitar, electric guitar we had. But then I started buying I bought two or three other like cheap guitars at DJ's pawn shop. And that would like make you play bass or something, even though you didn't really know how to play it. And we'd like, do you remember when we used to like pretend, I guess we must have been, I don't know if we were lip syncing, whatever, we put on Kick Out the Jams, like MC5, and like dress up kind of like some of the word like, wear American flag as a cape.
We wear capes.
Playing it. Yeah,
I do. Totally forgot about that. Yeah, we jump all over the room.
That was pretty funny, but that was probably the first sort of band experience, even though it wasn't really a real band because we weren't really playing. Probably, but I don't know how old we were. Probably, you know, like I was probably like 15, 14 or 15. We were probably like 10.
And you're 5 years off. So, Van, when did you write your first song?
Yeah.
Oh, well. I think Lee maybe wrote some songs before the four track too, because I remember
possible. I don't know.
We recorded "Sunshine of Your Love" was the first song we ever remember. You took two tape, those little crummy tape decks that are like rectangle shaped. We had two of those,
right.
And we bounced tracks. We'd like hold one tape deck. We didn't even have a mic. Like we'd hold one tape deck here, and then I'd sing. You'd put the guitar on, then I'd sing, and then then you'd play the tape and then play the bass along with it, and then we bounce it back over because it like five different bounces off cassette condenser mics that were built into tape decks.
I forgot about that. In fact, I remember recording Icy Stars,
yes,
that song, that way before I had the four track, but that was probably 83 or 84.
And I remember you came home, thank God for paper routes, because that's where we bought a lot of our gear, and our parents helped buy stuff.
Yeah.
But I remember coming home, you came home for your paper route, and Spin Magazine just came out, and you go, look at this, man, there's this ad in Spin Magazine, you can buy these four track things.
Yeah.
I think the four track really changed kind of our life as far as enabled us to write songs and encouraged us to do it. So if you have a recording device, it kind of changes everything, especially, I mean, kids nowadays can just sit there in their bedroom and do all the things that we did as a kid. And you do that the way you work now for your solo stuff. I know. And I'm working towards that.
I do everything on the computer pretty much. I mean, I mean, some people like really into analog stuff, but I've like just everything I do nowadays is totally digital. I feel good, except for, you know, the vocal and the guitar.
Hey, man, even Dino's doing digital these days. So, I mean, it's just not, I mean, for a while he ran the drums through an Otari 24 track just to get the warmth. But I think he's all, we call it in the box now.
And I just have to say, it's the creative outlet. And that's when I met Van, he was, I guess you could say, writer's block. And it's just really lovely that he's writing music again and getting started. Mm-hmm. And I think what we'll do is we'll take our first break, and then we're going to bring our co-writer on, and Violet can talk about that. You're listening to Lift Your Spirits with Dina Marie. Stay tuned.
The luminous blue. All I wanted was to be with you. All alone inside my head. All I wanted was to be led. Penn Cove Brewing Company, located in Coopville on beautiful Whidbey Island, is a small, family-friendly tap room featuring local craft beer, wine, and cider from around the Pacific Northwest. The Coopville Tap Room was created by two brothers following their dream of bringing a successful business back to the community they love, one craft beer at a time. Visit PennCoveBrewing.com, that's PennCoveBrewing.com, and check out the events calendar or sign up for their newsletter to get a weekly update on upcoming local live music, special events, and promotions right on Whidbey Island.
Thinking about getting away for a day or an overnight stay? Pristine Pacific Northwest Island beauty is closer and more affordable than you may think. From unspoiled hills to uncrowded Puget Sound shoreline, from wildlife and stately evergreen forests to bald eagles and blue herons, Whidbey and Camano Islands have it all. They're both located in Puget Sound and are an easy drive from either Seattle or Vancouver, BC. Both islands are accessible by bridge, and each island is a wonder of nature and scenic beauty to be enjoyed by the entire family. To visit this classic Pacific Northwest experience, visit WhidbeyCaminoIslands.com or like them on Facebook to see all they have to offer. You'll discover that island time is just a short drive away and can be affordably yours this weekend. Whidbey and Camano Islands, the shortest distance to far away.
Aloha! Join me, Dina Marie, on the island of Kauai. Let me be a tour guide for your spirit and a travel agent for your soul. You'll receive daily healing sessions and experience fun, interactive outings to some of my favorite places, sacred sites, secluded beaches, and sunrises that will lift your spirits. Go beyond the tourist spots, meet fascinating locals, and leave with amazing memories. Retreats are based on your schedule and budget. For more information, visit liftyourspiritswithdinamarie.com.
There's a reason they invented the internet. It's called 1150kknw.com.
Nothing to be seen. Silver shadows all around. All the gold that weighs me down.
Welcome back. You're listening to Lift Your Spirits with Dina Marie, and that is Legacy of Green, our new album. Van Conner, I co-wrote. He's the singer all the way. I don't do background vocals whatsoever. People think I'm on there.
You wrote a few.
I wrote
background
a few.
Vocals.
Oh. Well, I'm just, it was like the creative process to me that was amazing. And we were hanging out with Violet, and I saw the sticker Strange Earth, because you have a Strange Earth Records. And instead of watching television, I said, let's write a song.
Yeah. Yes. So, basically we just kind of sat around and typed out a song. I just kind of opened the song with "Stranger of Luminous Blue." I don't know. I was just thinking, you know, the Strange Earth sticker is pretty cool. I'm just going to add that in there for fun. I didn't really think it would stick.
And you ran with it, and Van couldn't type fast enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything that you, I couldn't believe it because I didn't know. I knew that you were interested in, like, writing and stuff, but, you know, you wrote stories and everything. But I was surprised. But that's actually a really great example. I remember you just have to go with it, and a lot of times starting is the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how Nearly Lost You happened. And a good one example is when we were sitting around Dollar Bill, that song, Lee. Remember, I'm not going to say how it started, but you just come up with some kind of joke. I'm not going to say what the original words were to that, but
yeah, that was beautiful.
Torn Like an Old Dollar Bill, how it started was just us sitting around, and Lee goes, "That's cool." I'm like, "Was it?" I was just kidding. Well, let's try it. And then it was just like how Violet did that night, where we basically wrote that song in one sitting. And then the original recording of it, the demo, I can hear you guys started playing that speed card game. And I could hear you guys are in the background during the recording, like going, "Oh, I lost," or "I won."
No, this is the beauty of it. She just, you're a natural. And so we go on a trip this. We should do this again, right?
Yeah.
We can
right.
do it again. And it's playful and it's fun. And I work with the chakra, so I have to bring it up. It's that creative part of yourself that just gets you into, it's your higher chakras where you have the inspiration, right. imagination, and creativity. And at your age, I'm sure, you know, life deals, I hated high school. I'll just say it that way. Yeah. But if I had musicians and artists around me, my life was amazing. So I always encourage parents, like your parents did, to encourage you to play music, encourage you to right. find that instrument and write poetry like Gary did. I mean, those things actually save people's lives. So you're going to be 17?
Yes, soon.
So you want to do communication, which now you're on the radio. You can write, you're a songwriter. Look at you.
Yeah.
And I think, you said natural.
And
because...
I think Van wants to touch on, when you have kids creative, what do you do with them, Van Connor? Send them straight to college?
Well, from our experience, like Lee pretty much has two, Gary Lee, has two college degrees, you know, pretty much. But we were really lucky because when we were kids, our mom was a musician and she encouraged us to do music. And it was okay in our family. And I remember some people, our friends and one of the people in our band, weren't allowed, like sometimes he couldn't come to practice or play a show because his mom and dad would say, you know, "Oh, you got to." Yeah, it was Mark. Okay.
He's from Pickerel.
If you're listening, Mark, we love you. And
but he was under 18, too.
Yes.
So were you. You were both where I was older.
Right. He used to get, it would be like, "I got to go mow the lawn instead of play a show or practice." Remember the mow the lawn?
Yeah.
Mow the lawn. But he would sneak out and stuff, and we ended up doing it, and he still plays. And he has a solo career as well. Just wonderful stuff, Mark Pickerel. And you know what? One thing that's cool is, like I said, my mom kind of passed down to us. And seeing Violet do that, it was so much like us. It was so much like us. And the real reward that you get at the end of the day is two things, I think, is when you're driving away from the studio that last time when they're finally mixed and it's one album and you listen to it for that first time. And Dina got to experience that. Because in the truck, remember?
It blows you away.
You're
it's
like,
so much
wow,
more.
We just, it's, because you listen to everything so many times and then when it's finally done, you're like, wow, okay, that's cool. You know, you hope at least that's cool. But
and when you re-listen to songs, I had some people say you they hate it and they can't redo it. I mean, and so you said when you play live, you just do it differently if you want to. I think that's
you can later on. Yeah. What one thing though, like this re-release of Sweet Oblivion, there's some songs in there that were really great songs, but the demo was better. Like. You know, I mean, the demo that Lee and I made sitting in a house in Fremont or something on an old busted piano where I walked through the room and Lee's playing this little riff. And it was called, Time Speaks Your Golden Tongue, but Silver Tongue. Like, that was the most amazing demo.
I think that one was on the Dust one. But yeah, that's not on this, but it's on.
That's right. That's all, yeah, that's a Dust B-side.
At least a Dust.
But there's always songs like that.
Yeah, you're right. We never could get that right. In fact, we recorded it. It's on the B-side of All I Know. And then it's later on the re-release of Dust on the Cherry Red Company. But we recorded it like for an album we didn't put out, and it just never turned out right. Then we recorded it again with George Akulius when we did Dust, and it was a kind of weird, strange version. But the original version was always way better. I remember that.
It was totally Rolling Stones too, and the original one. I remember, I still feel like it was my fault because I didn't do the Bill Wyman style bass part. I was doing more Grand Funk Railroad.
Well, by the time we got to record that song with George Akulius, we had been through so many permutations and stuff. It was just kind of like, he was like, we're going to completely do it completely differently. Like, you know, and then he got like a soul singer to sing on it and stuff.
That's right. We had studio musicians.
Yeah.
That was when we recorded at Capitol Records in the basement where Frank Sinatra recorded.
Yeah.
$1 million budget. Like massive food. I remember the food. Anyway,
cigars
and food.
Here's a good place to talk about overproducing. So, because Van has so much access to so many people and it's an amazing equipment and a sound studio, we took an album and it just went way out there and it was really hard to play, you know?
Yeah, that album actually has parts on it. We stripped it back down to we actually used the rough mixes on most of the album. First ones we did, and all the other instruments are not on there. And Jack, you know, Jack had the ability, like he's done with a lot of our stuff, to go in and make it sound like not a rough mix. But the performances, and one of them I just did at home like you, but my goal is to do it like you do now. But back to the natural thing with Violet, that was a cool thing. It reminded me of Lee and I when we were kids. And I think that's kind of a really cool thing. And not all kids, you know, like Harry's not in, or my son Harrison, he's not interested in music as much. He plays guitar. He did play. We used to jam.
He also played French horn. Great
French horn player.
Years.
On one of your Valis records.
Right. What I meant was not music. He's a great, he played on Valis record. He's a great musician, but songwriting is just, he likes mathematics. He's a calculus professor.
Well, and the key is...
he's not a professor.
He's an associate. Okay, I like to call him the professor.
Well, Violet...
More like Gilligan's Island style, though.
Violet's age, which is 17, right? That's where we're going. And we're talking about you at 17. Your brother's a little bit older at that time. But finding that thing your kid loves to do. If Harrison loves to do math, just whatever it is, get them involved in something that they're passionate about. And I think, you know, we were just going to have a show on our way to Ocean Shores. And then I saw that Sweet Oblivion was coming out on Friday, which happened to be a synchronicity, and so we invited Gary on. But I think this is just a really a great memory lane for you and your brother, and that you did music. I think that's changes people's lives. And some people go directly to school, and they don't get to do their passion. You know, they don't get to travel. And I think what we're trying to say to some of the parents, you know, ask your kid what they really love, like you're a writer.
Yeah.
And Violet also does art, and Lee used to do all these things too. Like, and everybody, the people in the Screaming Trees did. We'd do our own album covers. Lee still does that. I did my album cover this time in the last Valis album, and also I remember Brett from Beat Happening, who's still in Anacortes, and he still has the business over there. He still sells records at his little store. He said one time, I said, hey, man, did you check out this new album or something? He goes, dude, I just listen to music by my friends. Mm-hmm. And that was a cool thing because Beat Happening, they were like that. You know, that's, you know what I mean, Lee? Like,
yeah,
I just listen to music by my friends.
I mean, that's how we got into Nirvana. It's like they were
our friends.
The band. Their friends were like, hey, these guys are really cool. Then all of a sudden, a couple years later.
Remember we invited them to play when they first started in Ellensburg because... We didn't just do music. We promoted shows. We kind of started this music scene in Ellensburg with all our friends. We started recording because we had access to a studio and four tracks. We made fanzines. People, you know, it was all DIY back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys had a traveling show.
Well,
yeah,
the Connor family is a traveling show, yeah.
You remember what actually inspired us to go down to the studio? Was there an article by I never listened to guys' music, but punk rock a guy named Giza X. He had an article in Spin magazine about, if you want to do a record, do it yourself. Don't, you know, don't wait for a major label. Just, like, you know, just completely do it DIY. And that was what, you know, we've been recording on that four track, and we've been playing together with Flanagan and Pickerel, and you and I. And Pickerel was like, there's this guy, Steve Fisk, who, you know, has had albums, and he's got a studio. Of course, it wasn't his studio, it was Sam Albright's studio, but he worked there. And that was what inspired us, was this article. I don't know if you read the article. I remember I read the article, and I probably told you guys, we should go down to the studio and see what happens.
And do you remember what I said? We can't just go to a recording studio. I think I was 17. I just go, we can't just go to a studio and record. It sounded like so fancy or something.
Yeah, right. Well, it was a nice studio, although it was just 8-track. But still, it was, you know, they had a nice voice there. Sam, I guess he got, I don't know where he got the money to do it, but they had
just
it
the
all,
board was a piece of junk.
So when did it become? When did it become a job? You know, like,
not
first it was writing music, and it was kind of playful and fun, and you're blowing up things, and then you're making a band.
Yeah.
Gary, when did it become a job?
Well,
one
first
song
it was
a day.
Fun. Yeah, exactly. Well, first it was fun. You know, we got signed to SST Records. Then it became more like an artistic quest. You know, it was kind of like, we weren't making any money, but the reason we were doing it was because, like, you know, we love to write songs. We love to, not everyone loved to play live, but, you know, we did, some of us like to play live. I know Mark never was that into playing live, Flanagan, but, you know, he did it, and we toured. And then at the point, about 1989, after Buzz Factory came out, we were kind of like, what is this? We're doing this every year. We're going on tour. We're putting out these records. We're not making any money. What should we do? And, you know, there was one idea, just give up. You know, I mean, we talked about, you know, I think just quitting. And then there was also the idea, well, we could probably get signed to a major label, because some of the SST bands, some of the Meat Pups had just got signed to a major label at that point. And we're like, okay, let's give it a try. So we ended up getting Susan Silver, who was Soundgarden's manager, our manager, and worked for 6 months, or I don't know how long it was, to try to get signed to a major label. We got signed to Epic. Well, you know, that was a big deal. We went through a lot of stuff, like Mark Pickerel quitting the band, recording Uncle Anesthesia, doing all that stuff, and, you know, then we came out with that record, and this was before Nirvana, before Pearl Jam. And we're kind of like, well, what's next? And if that had been it, we probably would have done some records, you know, maybe we wouldn't have done anything else, but something happened, you know, the year punk broke or whatever in 1991, and suddenly the kind of music we were doing was the big thing, you know, and Epic kind of realized that, and you know, that started to become a job at that point, although it was definitely still fun. We did Sweet Oblivion, you know, on tour for almost an entire year, 1993.
In a bus. Finally got a bus at that point.
Yeah, we had a tour bus, you know, so it was easier to tour. And that was the thing with the tour buses. Like, it cost a lot of money, but it made it so much easier to be out there for a longer amount of time. You know, it wasn't like you're stuck in this little van.
Because Van
but
was the band man. Van was the van man.
Well, I helped. I was the second driver. Rod was the first driver, but we all helped out, and we all worked really hard for whatever reason. We weren't going for any kind of money or glory. We just were like, "Wow, we can do this. That's cool."
Yeah.
And it was a lot of work, but it was fun. But
The only time it really became not fun was after we
had a hit.
We spent 2 years, we tried to record a record right after Sweet Oblivion, but this didn't turn out right. We went back in the studio, but Seattle at the time, Don Fleming and John and Yellow, people who did Sweet Oblivion. And things just weren't, nobody had been writing songs because we'd been on tour for a whole year. And we didn't have, you know, back then, we didn't have a portable four track or anything. They had portable four tracks. It's not like now, we're just like, you know, recording your phone. You can record like a multi track thing. So, you know, the songs weren't really there, and we went back to the drawing board and just kind of spent. I had moved out, been in the process of moving out to New York because I just got married. My wife lived in New York, Janet. But I had to spend 2 more years in Seattle writing songs.
Sitting with me in a Vernon Hunt apartment. What was our job description? Do you remember what we had to do? one song a day. That was our job. We had to write one song a day. That's what we did.
And unfortunately, for different reasons I won't get into, Mark Lanegan wasn't at... Well, see, that's the thing with Sweet Oblivion is that we all got together and wrote everything together and we're, like, hanging out together and, like, practicing together. And that was, like, really... Sweet Oblivion is really collaborative effort, probably the most collaborative. I talk about that in the interview on that comes with the new disc. But suddenly, it was, like, not that way with Death. It was the opposite. Like, Mark was completely isolated.
Okay, so let's talk about the creative process. Gary, the creative process.
Yeah,
best albums come from you guys sitting around making music together, not being forced to produce.
Right. See, Van would come down sometimes, like to Seattle, and we work together. And then sometimes he'd just stay up. You were living in Stanwood at the time, weren't you?
Camino. That's where I had my house on Camino. And I had a room set up with a studio, and I'd sit there in my bathrobe all day. And, you know, Harry was a baby.
Did you get a call from Lanegan every night about, like, midnight? And say,
yeah. Yeah, the dreaded phone call. And
then I would have to take him a tape.
Cassettes, yeah.
But the problem was, is like, you know, and I'd have to take him a tape and maybe fast food. And then a hand
yeah,
would come out.
Yeah, two Jumbo Jacks.
And he'd take the tape. And then
tape and Jumbo Jacks.
90% of the time, I wouldn't hear anything. Every once in a while, he'd call back the next day and say, this is great. But the thing was, we only ended up using probably, I don't know, like less than 10 of those songs because one or two of them were written right at the last minute. But this is for the Dust album, actually, yeah. And coming out. And the weird thing is for all the toil and hardship we went through of trying to write all the songs, the album really turned out really amazing. You know, I personally, to me, that's like probably better than Sweet Oblivion. I mean, it's just like, you know, just the songs. I don't know what it is about.
And the production, and I think it was fun because you and I kind of went a little bit, let's just do whatever, you know, because when Ben Montench from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers came in with two Mellotrons, that was amazing.
I know we're talking the Sweet Oblivion thing coming out today, but Dust, to me, is like the rock record that we finally made that was like a 70s rock album or something, you know, and George Drakoulias really was, you know, instrumental in doing that. His production was, he was a real producer, like a 60s producer that got in there and really worked with songs and not just, you know, he wasn't an engineer.
No, he danced around.
Talking about Sweet Oblivion again, it was weird because working with Don Fleming was the first time that we'd ever worked with a producer that wasn't an engineer, because Steve Fisk was the engineer and, you know, Jack Endino was the engineer. And then suddenly we had an engineer, Giant Yellow, and a producer. So it was quite a bit of a different vibe with the people who are recording the record on Sweet Oblivion than it had been before, because you have the guy who's actually recording it. Then you ask for somebody else who's like sort of, you know, not quite sure what they're doing, but they're involved in the creative process.
So when I met Van, he was struggling with writing, and the key is to have a good time. Is find other things you enjoy, so the light bulb goes off again. But if you're sitting there forcing and trying to write, it's almost painful. It's frustrating for sure. But finding that thing you love to do. So he's hiking or biking or fishing, and I do healing work, but it's writing music and poems and art are just so essential right now to keep our lights on, you know, because it's getting dark out there. But we're going to take one more break, and we'll be back with Violet after the break. You listen to Lift Your Spirits with Dina Marie.
Feeling the need to get away and reconnect with Mother Nature? Located on Whidbey Island, Earth Sanctuary is a peaceful and magical sculpture garden, nature reserve, and retreat center with 2 miles of nature trails, 3 bird-filled ponds, and a variety of powerful sacred spaces, including a labyrinth, stone circles, and medicine wheels. Come and enjoy the wonders of nature and experience personal renewal, spiritual growth, and healing today. Visit earthsanctuary.org or The Earth Sanctuary on Facebook for more information.
Make us part of your daily routine. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Thank you. Hi, this is Dina Marie. You've heard me talking about writing songs with Mr. Van Conner. Well, I'm happy to say that our album is out now.
It's called Coming Back Again, and it features songs like Legacy of Green, Silent Universe, and the title track, Coming Back Again.
Our album, Coming Back Again, is now available for streaming and purchase at your favorite online retailer, including iTunes, Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, and many more.
Go to dina-marie.com. That's dina-marie.com for a full list of retailers.
Watching the sunrise, an ocean stands between us. Look into the sky, think of second chances. Look into the past, a thousand miles between us. You know you'll.
Thank you for joining us this morning. That is, what song is that?
That song's Silent Universe, and that seems to be a lot of people's favorite on the record for whatever reason, and it was one that, and like most of the songs that end up being good, were either fun to write or it just came out, and that one just came out. And it reminded me of Lee and I when we wrote several, like Butterfly, which is on the new release, a new Sweet Oblivion release. That song, the lyrics were originally different and kind of a joke at first. We laughed. And when we wrote All I Know, I remember sitting there and going, let's do a song that sounds like Scooby-Doo Show or something, or Banana Splits. And it was fun, you know, and we never thought they'd be on the record, you know. And it seems like that's true with almost all the songs out of what, hundreds and hundreds we wrote for Dust. Most of the songs that ended up on the record were either, hey man, that's cool, you know, or, you know, and instantly you could tell, or it was like, let's make a joke because we're so tired of being serious. And then we had to change the lyrics at the end.
I think Sweet Oblivion had a lot of stuff like that, especially because you, me, and Mark Lanigan were all like writing stuff together, and probably half of the songs. Well, the weird thing, I talk about this in the interview too, is like that about half of the songs on Sweet Oblivion didn't even have vinyl lyrics even after we got in the studio, and then like Mark kind of disappeared, remember, there for 2 or 3 days.
We just jammed
the song and got to write the lyrics, and suddenly he came back and we didn't go in the studio, and then we heard it a few days later and like, Jesus, this is really amazing, he actually pulled it off, you know.
Right.
Did the lyrics and all the vocals like in a couple of days.
Well, next week I have two women that I've been following for quite a while. It's Faye Wiedenhoff. She's been on the show, her band Sea Star. She plays acoustically in the studio, and we have Savannah Woods, and she's with Waking Maya. And I've known them for quite a while, but their music got better when they did something a little bit life changing, like they traveled alone, or they changed their lifestyle to where, like I said, Savannah stays in her van and she meets all these people, but she comes back with life experience that gives her something to write about. And I think, and I would love to encourage, you know, if you have a 17-year-old, let them travel before they go to college. Let them have some experiences, because that's, our life is a song, right? Make it beautiful. Make it joyful. Make it colorful. I'm almost too colorful, so I have to tone it down a lot. But I'm kind of excited. I didn't even think about it, that we could actually, we could write some music this weekend in Ocean Shores.
Yeah.
That's your prescription.
Yeah.
So you have anything that you'd like to write about?
I'm not really sure. I think I have a few ideas, but I'm not sure how they'll go, you know?
And it's good for us, too, to hear the perspective of a 17-year-old at our age. Ha-ha. Life experience. So you've heard the album. What do you think?
I really like it.
Do you share it with your friends?
I don't really have that many friends, but I've shared it with the ones I have.
And I'll tell you something, too. Like, I wrote my book, and it was hard to give it to other people because you think they're going to judge it. And I'm at that with the album, because we were at a different place. Maybe some dark things were going on, and we were processing. But I think it's hard sometimes to care about it after you're done with it and wonder what people are going to think about it.
That's true. When you write something like that that's kind of personal, go ahead, Vi.
There's also the fear that that you will only receive criticism for it and you won't get any validation for it despite what you went through to produce it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great insight. Yeah, that and I know that I remember so many bands that recorded full records when we were kids, and they were great, and they never put them out because they always said, oh, well, you know, it's not ready yet. It's not ready yet. And that whole syndrome, remember that, Gary Lee?
Mm-hmm.
How
yeah.
It's not quite good enough yet. And we fell prey to that sometimes, where you just have to put it out and move on to the next thing, you know?
Yeah, we had two of those.
I know. But, and anyway, so Violet.
Yes.
So there's other creative things you do besides music.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about it?
Well, I like to draw and write. I'm planning on writing a book sometime. I have the bare idea down. I want to write multiple books, actually. And I like to draw. It's just fun. So.
Well, and I think, too, when I wrote my book, or even the song, it's just very spontaneous. If you feel it, mm-hmm. write it really quick. And you might not even go back to it for months. But as long as you can get that process started, mm-hmm. and that's your power chakra. That's like just getting on the dance floor when no one's dancing and getting it taken care of. Because I think inspiration comes in waves. And when it's there, you got it. Right, especially nowadays, there's so much to be depressed about. You got to grab on to anything that inspires you and get it in writing.
Yeah.
Or now, like Gary said, you could use your phone. That's a whole. That's what Van and I did. We just had to oh my God, that's perfect. We have all kinds of silly songs we didn't make, but we at least got it out so we wouldn't forget and lose that moment.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and it's probably the same way. I know, Violet, I saw some of your artwork last night. I really liked a new picture that you drew.
Yeah.
The one that we said looks like a ghost everywhere. different ghosts floating around and etherealness. But I know, I think it's cool when people, like your uncle you kind of do everything. You know, like I always had, I'm more of a graphic arts person than an actual artist, but Lee kind of does everything, and that's kind of what you need. And you need people. Like, I'm glad I have you, Violet, and my family and people around me who are willing to, you know, all pieces. Like, oh, that guy can draw. That guy can play guitar. That guy can do this. And you all come together to have this, kind of a cool. I always think, like Lee said, the best people, what people think of as their best record was the most collaborative between mm-hmm. specific people. And Joe Strummer from The Clash said, you know what? The biggest mistake I ever made was splitting The Clash in half, you know, because they split in half. He said, there's something about, even though we hated each other, even though we beat the heck out of each other, those four people, the original Clash guys, mm-hmm. he said, there's something weird. This great interview, if you can look at it, makes me want to cry thinking about it. Because he just said, you know what, man? Because he's a genius. I mean, Joe Strummer was a genius. God rest his soul. But that's what he said is, man, and the Screaming Trees were kind of like that. We fought a lot and, you know, and family involved, it makes it even harder but it made it better. So.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, it's like sometimes it's frustrating to think, I wish I could have done this by myself or whatever. But any of the stuff we did, you know, if it wouldn't have been like only a solo album by me or Mark or Van or something, it just never would have been the same. You know, it was definitely a thing between everyone in the band that made it the way it was.
Listen to the Kiss solo albums and you'll know what I'm talking about. I think our solo albums are way, like Mark's solo stuff, Barrett's, Pickerel's, yours and mine. I think they're all really good.
That was the original idea. Remember?
Yeah.
To do the Kiss solo albums on SST, but then Mark on Sub Pop. And I guess
that's right. I did Solomon Grundy. You did
Purple Outside.
Purple Outside, which is an amazing album. With our little brother Patrick on drums, who later was in Vallis.
Yeah.
So I think all the Connors just kind of have to do something.
Have to be creative. And that's what I, when you weren't creating, you weren't a happy human being, you know? And so getting back into music, but you have StrangerThRecords.com and a lot of Gary's on there. You're on there with Valis.
Yeah, Lee's last record's on there. And I'm not that active on that label right now, but I'm kind of thinking about doing it in a little bit different way because it's really expensive to do vinyl. And Lee just did vinyl on his new record, which is called?
It's called, I don't know the name of my record, Unicorn Curry. Yeah, I was so lucky to, I was originally going to try to do this place called Digger's Factory in France. You like get pre-orders and they do the record, but I couldn't get hardly any pre-orders. But then I get a message from this guy in Italy who has a small label called Vincibus Eruptum Records. And he was like, I really like to put your record on vinyl. And I was like, okay. So I printed out 300 of them, sent me 50 of them. So I got 50 of them, sell those on Bandcamp. And then he's got, you know, people in Europe ordering them to get some record stores around Italy and stuff. So, but that's the thing, you know, about nowadays with the internet. It's like I spent from 2000, probably to 2008, 2010, not doing anything. I didn't have a record label. I didn't really know what to do. I was pretty much lost as far as I was doing some songs. But then suddenly I was realizing, you know, I guess the technology and the internet kind of caught up with me. And I was like, I can do all this myself now. I can put out stuff. You start using Bandcamp. That's my main thing I use now. And I put out three records in the last 10 years. I put out one about 10 years ago, and then the Ether Trippers record that Van had on Stranger. And then
amazing record, yeah.
Months, so.
And I'm lucky because I've been holding off on getting into Unicorn Curry. I kind of went through some hard times this last year, but now I think this weekend I'm going to crank the heck out of it because I love your album so.
Is contagious because I can't get it out of my head, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to end our show with the song that you sent me, and what's the name of that, Gary?
Yeah, Theodore's Flying, the first song.
And if people want to purchase it or they want to get a hold of you, and where do they go?
Yeah, you can go to Gary Lee Connor at Bandcamp.com, or if you look on Facebook, you'll see my page. There's a page for Unicorn Curry and also my own page with Gary Lee Connor.
And one more time, the name of this song that we're going to listen to?
Theodore's Flying, first track on Unicorn Curry, latest album.
Thank you for joining us. And our album, you can go to dina-marie.com. Violet and Van and Connor and I have, I think it's going to be fun. We'll just banter and write a song this weekend. See where it takes us.
Yeah. Exactly.
Any last words, Violet, Connor?
No, not really.
Okay. Sometimes listening in silence is magic, so it's all good. All right, join us next week for more people, places, and activities that will lift your spirits.
Face it.